and welcome to Worlds Apart. Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and partially Syria. A failed state followed by the implosion of radicalism and terrorism has been the most typical, if not assured, outcome of Western interventions in the Middle East. As Washington yet again tries to militarily impose its agenda on Iran and Lebanon, how likely is America to fail again? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Ali Rizk, a Beirut-based security analyst. Mr. Rizk, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for being available.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, we are recording this interview just days after the U.S. president announced that the peace deal with the Iranians has been, quote, largely negotiated. And with Donald Trump, you never know for sure what largely and negotiated actually means. So I want to start by asking you whether you believe that we are indeed drawing closer to a negotiated solution to this crisis.
I cautiously believe so, yes. Despite the fact that there have been ups and downs over the past few days, yesterday the optimism decreased somewhat because Trump said that he's in no rush to make a deal. But nevertheless, I still think that a deal is more likely than not in the very near future. And I think that perhaps the turning point was Trump's visit to China. I think that Trump was hoping that with the visit to China, he would get President Xi Jinping's approval for tightening the sanctions for China to stop buying Iranian oil. The Chinese refused that. And now we saw that China took up a more active role in the settlement with Iran. We saw that the Pakistani prime minister visited China and the Chinese are taking up a greater role in the Iranian issue. So I think that these particular factors are important. And I think that Trump is not ready to escalate more than he already did. You remember that ever since the attack on the Qatari gas installation, Trump said that he was going to escalate, target Iranian infrastructure. He threatened to do that many times, but all the times he did not follow through. And I think that shows you that Trump isn't ready to escalate beyond a certain threshold. And so for these reasons, I think that it's likely we will have an agreement.
Well, while both the United States and Iran may have their reasons for lowering the kinetic intensity of the confrontation, it's hard to believe that the core issues that led to this attack in the first place have been fully settled. Even if the two sides manage to agree on something situationally, do you think it's likely to last, or do you think Israel is likely to play along?
I think the last part of your question is the most important thing. Israel is going to be the main sabotager of any agreement if an agreement is reached. Yes, it is quite likely that Israel is going to do as much as it can in order to prevent that agreement from continuing. I think that, yes, many issues still are of disagreement between both sides. But I think, generally speaking, there aren't that major disagreements between the U.S. and Iran. The United States makes Iran its problem because of its alliance with Israel. In other words, it's because of America's close alliance with Israel that you have this animosity between America and Iran. Otherwise, I think that the issues between America and Iran are very much solvable. Now, Robert Kagan, who was a well-known neocon, he had a second article released in the past few days in The Atlantic, and he basically made the argument that the Israelis are the biggest losers of an agreement, because basically what's going to happen if this agreement is indeed reached is that Iran is going to become a major regional hegemon. And that's something which Israel will lose if it happens.
Now, the Iranians at this point of time seem quite proud of the pushback that they have been able to mount in response to the U.S.-Israeli attack. But I suspect that the atmosphere in Lebanon may be a bit different. How does it feel to be living in a country that receives so much Israeli pounding but cannot do much about it?
Yes, the Israelis are continuing with heavy bombardment. As we speak now, there's been major escalation in South Lebanon. However, I think that the Israelis were caught by surprise by Hezbollah at the same time. After the 66-day war in 2024, after the very heavy blows that Israel inflicted on Hezbollah, I think that Israel was thinking that this time is going to be rather easy. Now, as you probably know, the Hezbollah drones, the fiber optic drones, are causing a major problem for the Israelis. There's been a new Israeli military fatality today, in fact. So, yes, there is heavy Israeli bombardment. At the same time, Hezbollah has performed many or better than many people expected. And that's also led to a certain sense of optimism, at least amongst Hezbollah's core supporters.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your writing, you've been making this point that the Iranian commitment to Hezbollah isn't just rhetorical or isn't just tactical. In fact, it's very similar to the so-called special relationship that Israel has with the United States. In what way is it similar?
Well, first of all, ideologically, Hezbollah is the group that is most ideologically aligned with Iran out of all the members of the Axis of Resistance. It believes in the 12th Shia Imam doctrine, which is a special branch of Shiism. And Hezbollah is the only one, or not the only one, but the most prominent player that adopts this particular doctrine, in addition to certain Iraqi Shia factions. But Hezbollah, most of all, stands out in that regard. So ideologically, there's a special relationship. And also strategically, and I think that what happened in Syria made the relationship even more strategic, because now the Iranians have to contend with not just the loss of an ally in former President Bashar al-Assad, but also, I would argue, the emergence of an enemy in Syria. So Syria has been transformed from a friendly state to Iran into an enemy state for Iran. And so Hezbollah plays a key role, given its location in Lebanon, right next door, and also right next door to the Israelis. And the Israelis have carried out, or them, they've been the main player in the war against Iran. So Hezbollah is very important in facing these two twin threats, the Salafi jihadis in Syria and the Israelis as well, which are at the same time the main threats to Iran. Mm-hmm.
Now, given the scant details that we so far have about this ongoing peace negotiation, it's not quite clear whether Hezbollah is going to be part of the deal. But you suggested before that the Islamic Republic may actually be willing to cede some ground on the nuclear issue in exchange for Washington going easier on Hezbollah. And it seems to make a good military sense, especially if you don't believe that the Iranians were after a nuclear bomb in the first place. But with Hezbollah, indeed, they're enjoying a strong military and religious partnership, which is perhaps the reason why Israel is so set on trying to demolish this organization. Do you think the Americans have enough influence or enough acumen in trying to override the Israeli preferences here?
That's the big issue. That's the big question. Now, I would argue that strategically speaking, Hezbollah for Iran is more important than Israel is for the U.S. In fact, I don't see any strategic value which Israel gives the U.S. I think it's the opposite. The Israelis are becoming an increasing burden on the U.S. Now, that doesn't mean the United States is going to agree to ease up on Hezbollah. In fact, according to the indicators, the Americans are pursuing, are intensifying the campaign against Hezbollah. Now we're hearing Secretary of State Marco Rubio. He said that there's a plan being put together to establish a special unit in the Lebanese military to disarm Hezbollah by force. And that's the exact same Israeli preference. The Israelis want to disarm Hezbollah at all costs, even if it leads to civil war in Lebanon. In fact, I think that civil war in Lebanon would suit the Israelis well. Now, will it suit the Americans well? That's a different question. But I'm not very optimistic in answering your question that the Americans are going to influence the Israelis when it comes to the Lebanese file and Hezbollah in particular.
Well, let's discuss some of the reasons why they may be compelled to do so, because you make a very compelling case that trying to get rid of Hezbollah or trying to get rid of the entire Iranian government, which would be the ideal Israeli outcome, may actually create fertile ground for hardcore anti-American Shia militancy similar to the one practiced by Salafi jihadist groups. Can you expand more on that?
Yes, well, the assassination of the former Iranian supreme leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, this was something unprecedented in the Shia world. You're talking about maybe the second most senior Shia figure after Grand Ayatollah Sistani in Iraq. And I think that created a lot of anti-American sentiments. It's something which never happened before. And I think that the attacking or the targeting of Khamenei in particular, because you're not only talking about an Iranian figure, you're talking about a Shia figure. He has a following in the broader Shia world. So that made the Americans look like they were at war with Shias, not just at war with Iran. And Iran is seen as the symbol, if you would like, of Shia power. Now, if the Americans continue and if they want to get rid or try and carry out a so-called regime change operation in Iran, and if they clamp down on Hezbollah at the same time, there's going to be a growing impression that they're at war with Shias. And that's going to lead to repercussions. And there have been some recent reports, sorry, you probably saw them, about a member of Hezbollah Iraq. I think his name is Assadi. He was recently apprehended and sent to the United States. I believe he was arrested in Turkey, according to the reports, and he was said to be plotting attacks in the West. Now, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is true, because I think that the factions that tend to be a bit more extreme, so to speak, like the Iraqi factions, they might be prone to carry out such actions.
Absolutely. And I mean, the emergence of a radicalism set on striking inside the United States has been a very consistent outcome of American interventions overseas. But what I find very puzzling here is that Israel is much closer, and yet it doesn't seem to be too concerned about driving the whole region, its own neighborhood, berserk. Why do you think that is?
That's a very good question. Look, I think that what Israel wants is to be surrounded by failed states. Because when you're surrounded by failed or weak states, that makes it that much easier to justify the expansion and to pursue the Greater Israel project. And we saw that, for example, in Syria. Immediately after the downfall of Bashar al-Assad, the Israelis went and bombed and they annexed more Syrian territory. In addition to that, when you have the emergence of radical Islamic groups, so to speak, that also works to Israel's favor, whereby Israel can again say to the US, look, you and I, we have a common enemy represented by radical Islam. They can also say that we have to expand in order to protect ourselves from the threat of radical Islam. So I think that the Israelis calculate that the benefits of all that chaos in the region outweigh the costs. I think so. And in addition, also, the Israelis have never been attacked by Salafi jihadis, which is something that is rather puzzling. Well, I know I myself, I don't have a clear answer for that.
Well, I think one of the factors that the Israelis may be counting on is the very, very short historical memory that Americans, for some reason, still have. Because, I mean, you don't need to be a very deep thinker to look back, you know, 5 or 10 years ago and see how that policy is likely to play out. Anyway, Mr. Rizk, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back to this conversation in a moment. Stay tuned.
I see you're washing the Moscow mules. And we're gonna brainwash the crap out of you.
Getting word from Red Square.
Who are you? I don't care what my voters say.
I am not a warmonger. I am a peacemaker.
Eating the dogs, eating the cats.
Huggy, there you go. All squeaky clean.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Ali Rizk, a Beirut-based security analyst. Mr. Rizk, before the break, we discussed how the toppling of the Iranian state could lead to the proliferation of terrorist groups in the region. And you've noted before in your writing that one of the most active and lethal of those groups is ISIS-K, or Islamic State Khorasan Province, which has been able in recent years to carry out large-scale terrorist attacks in Iran as well as in Russia. As far as you know, do they have any ambitions, motives, or capacity to hit the United States?
Well, the former commander of U.S. Central Command, CENTCOM, Eric Kurilla, he said that ISIS could soon possess the capability. This was back when he was still in his position. ISIS could soon possess the capability to strike the United States homeland. The recently released U.S. counterterrorism strategy also, it singled out ISIS-K by name, in addition to Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is Al-Qaeda's franchise based in Yemen. So the Americans do appear to be genuinely concerned. And I think that if ISIS-K does have the opportunity, yes, they will strike at the U.S. You have to remember that for Salafi jihadi groups, the main jackpot, so to speak, is the U.S. They compete with each other over who can attack that power. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think that this is a dangerous issue. But interestingly, I'm not sure how seriously the Americans take that. Because if the Americans really took that seriously, as they should, they wouldn't be pursuing the policy which they are currently pursuing in Iran. Because Iran actually serves as a bulwark or as a player that would prevent the strengthening of these groups. So when you try to topple Iran or weaken Iran, that inevitably is going to lead to the strengthening of these groups, and that will make them more capable of hitting the American homeland. So indeed, this reflects, I think, the very, very stunning American miscalculations and an American policy which is designed first and foremost to serve Israel more than it's designed even to serve American interests.
Well, speaking about the design of this policy, ISIS-K's agenda includes establishing a caliphate in the historical Khorasan region, which covers parts of Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, as well as some Central Asian states. And it's been largely reported, we all know that they already have established an active presence in the Afghanistan-Pakistan border region, not much different from the Taliban that operated in that area back in the 1980s and was at that time supported by the Americans as a potential asset against the Soviet presence. What I want to ask you is whether you think that ISIS-K is, for the lack of a better word, a genuine terrorist organization, or is it at least partially cultivated as a, you know, as a tool in geopolitical rivalry?
I would say it's in the middle. I don't think that anyone created any particular country or intelligence agency created ISIS. I wouldn't say that. But do they use ISIS sometimes? Do they try and turn a blind eye to ISIS? Yes, I would say that. In fact, former Secretary of State John Kerry once, he said that ISIS could be used to put pressure on former President Bashar al-Assad to make concessions. So they do occasionally use these groups, yes. But were they created? No. Now, will they try? I think you're trying to allude in your question if they'll try and use such groups against Iran. And that wouldn't be out of the question as well. They could possibly do that. Would this be a wise step? No. Because as you yourself said, they tried to do this against the Soviet Union before. And what happened then? It backfired and you ended up with the September 11 attacks. But yes, I wouldn't rule that out, that they might try and take advantage of these groups for their own particular objectives. That's not certain, but it can't be ruled out.
Well, Mr. Rizk, my concern here is that the Americans are not very consistent or coherent in connecting the dots or connecting the chains of their own, you know, policy decisions. So I'm not sure they quite remember what they did when it came to the Taliban. It seems like in foreign policy, they are constantly reinventing the same wheel and at the same time having an amnesia that they have tried it before.
Yes, and that's the problem. That's the major problem with American policymaking. They keep on making the same mistakes time and again. And in fact, it's getting worse. I mean, previous American presidents were smart enough not to go to war with Iran. This president, he was stupid enough, and I'm sorry to use that expression, he was stupid enough to go to war against Iran. So it's not like the situation is improving. The situation is getting worse. And I think one of the main reasons it's getting worse is because Israel has more and more influence over American policy. Now, Israel has always had influence over American policy, but I don't think it's ever had the influence it enjoys today over Trump. You have a person who is very easily, I think, influenced by praise, by nice words. Netanyahu has used that to perfection, I have to admit. And you also have Lindsey Graham and the Israel First Club and people like Mike Huckabee, who is the American ambassador to Israel. So the Israelis enjoy unprecedented influence over American policy, which is leading to more American fatal mistakes, I think.
But also, I think the current conflict, unlike the first attack on Iran in 2025, has produced wide-reaching consequences for the Arab allies of the United States, who now viscerally experience the ramifications of such a partnership. Do you think that's likely to result in any change in the strategic or perhaps geopolitical posturing?
I'm not sure. I'm not very, very, I don't expect that, so to speak. I don't think that they're going to change their alliances to leave the American alliance and maybe become or pivot towards the East, towards drawing closer to China and Russia. I still think they're going to remain first and foremost American allies. And I think that one of the reasons why Trump perhaps might be seeking an agreement is because he wants to preserve these alliances with these countries. Remember that Trump puts a lot of priority and emphasis on money. And these countries, these Arab countries, have a lot of money, in addition to the fact that they have a lot of oil, et cetera. And so maybe this is one of the important factors which is making Trump perhaps take a more rational approach and back down, because he needs these Gulf countries. He needs their money. He wants to preserve the alliance with them.
But, you know, generating that income and using that money is becoming increasingly more difficult for the Arab states. You wrote before that this conflict and Israel's demonstrated ability to leverage the United States to its end turned it from a geopolitical foe for Tehran into a real, if not existential, security threat. I wonder how it played out for other regional players. How do you think they see Israel in relation of their own security? I can't believe that they would be happy with this, you know, tail wagging the dog.
Look, I think that the Arab countries, as you well know, there's a sharp divide between them. Look at the UAE, for example. The UAE is going in full swing with Israel. It's just as enthusiastic as Israel is regarding the war. I think the UAE wants to position itself as Israel's main partner, because they see that by positioning themselves as Israel's main partner, that would bring them closer to the Trump administration, and perhaps then they would become America's main ally in the Gulf. And they have aspirations to host the Central Command. You know that Central Command of the U.S. is now based in Qatar. They want that to be moved to Abu Dhabi, and they see that the way to do that is to further enhance the ties with the Israelis. Now, the other parties, the other Arab countries in the Gulf, they, of course, have a different approach. And I think, yes, they do see Israel more as a threat, and that is impacting their decisions, and it's impacting the approach they're taking.
Let me ask you specifically about Syria, which I think for a while at least also tried to enhance its partnership both with the United States and with Israel, which, by the way, didn't impede the Israeli army from taking large swaths of the Syrian territory south of Damascus. Have you seen any change, any repositioning in President al-Sharaa's stance lately?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen any notable shifts in President Ashraf's stance. I think that Ashraf wants to basically to stay out of the whole thing. I think that's his priority. Now, if it was up to him personally, I think he would want to get more involved, for example, in the campaign against Hezbollah in Lebanon. But I don't think it's up to him personally. I think his influence by the Saudis and more so by the Turks, and you're well aware of the current animosity between Turkey and Israel, and Turkey doesn't want anything to happen that would serve Israel at this point, for example, to weaken Hezbollah. So I think that plays a major role in the stances which Ashraf takes.
Now, speaking about this desire to stay out of the fire, I've spoken to some Syrian sources lately, and what I hear is this very understandable sentiment that we just don't want to be pawns in anyone's game. We just want to rebuild our country and live peacefully. And I'm sure that people in many other Middle Eastern countries also feel the same way. The question is, nowadays, can any nation in this region count on safety through non-interference or through placating the hegemon?
That's a good question. I think that depends on what happens between the U.S. and Iran. If the U.S. and Iran do reach an agreement, and if the United States forces Israel's hand, that's the main question, then I think all countries can feel safe. And this is a point which the former National Counterterrorism Center Director Joe Kent has made time and again. He said that it all depends on how willing Trump is to force the Israeli hand. Mm-hmm. So we have to wait and see how that will play out. Now, if it turns out that this war is just doing too much damage and Trump has no choice but to force the Israelis, perhaps he may. But we have to wait and see. It's really unclear. He's surprised all of us in terms of how far he's willing to go to do what the Israelis want, or perhaps the Israelis have been able to convince him. But I think that without an agreement and Israel having a free hand and trying to pursue the Greater Israel project, no, nobody is immune.
Well, on that note, it's no secret, you mentioned it already, that Israel's geopolitical goal is to be the regional hegemon. Do you think, though, this is a realistic undertaking, even if we put Iran aside? Do you think the Arab states and Turkey can find genuine accommodation with this grand plan for the region?
No, because the Israelis are still viewed as an enemy, at least by the majority of the populations, if not the leaders. And they're being viewed more as an enemy because of this current Israeli fanatical government and the massacres they committed in Gaza and also in other places like Lebanon. So Israel simply can't be accepted as a regional hegemon, despite maybe its wishes, despite some other efforts. That can't happen. But I think that countries like Turkey as well will not allow that. So there are major obstacles, I believe, which prevent the Israelis from assuming such a role aside from Iran.
Well, Mr. Risk, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for sharing your analysis with us.
My pleasure.
And thank you for watching. See you again next week on Worlds Apart.